You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hi, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. A couple of pieces of business. The next great podcast, that contest we had, 1,800 entries. We have somehow narrowed it down to about 20. We're going to try to narrow it down to 10. We'll let everybody know if they are part of the final 10 process here. And then the winner, I'm going into business with you for a year. We're going to produce a podcast together. Also, Amazon Music has a new podcast that I started. It's called That Scene. And we start out with Adam Sandler talking about that scene in Happy Gilmore when he fights Bob Barker. We have Will Ferrell talking about that scene where he's streaking in Old School. Bryan Cranston, that scene, the final scene in Breaking Bad. All of those available on Amazon Music. Welcome to the program. If you'd like to get in touch, you can a variety of ways. You can dial us up. You can email. You can tweet. You can do all the above. You can watch. You can listen. You can watch on Peacock. It's free. Download the app. And our great radio affiliates around the country, numbering 362. The bubble's been full of unlikely headlines. And I don't think anybody predicted that Jamal Murray would be out-dueling LeBron, AD, and the Lakers in a conference title game. But that's what happened to the Nuggets and the Lakers last night, as LA's lead is now 2-1. And the Lakers captured the first two. They probably should have lost that game too, but I don't know if anybody was counting Denver out. We shouldn't, because they just don't go away. The Lakers aren't panicking, I'm sure, but this probably got their attention a little bit, because Jamal Murray has become a legitimate star. We know the Joker is a star as well, but Denver's come back from 3-1 deficits in the first two series. So even if Los Angeles wins game four and goes up 3-1, you can't say the series is over. Not against a Nuggets team that refuses to go home. Plus, you get a younger team in the bubble where there's no true home court advantage. And it doesn't feel like these players are as intimidated as they would be if that game would have been played in Los Angeles last night. And you're seeing that with Murray and Joker, but also the role players. That's really the key. You know, I look at LeBron and AD, but they do need help with role players. LeBron had another triple-double. That's the 26th career postseason triple-double. Second all-time to Magic Johnson's 30. But in 10 of those 26, LeBron lost those games. That's the most of any player all-time in the playoffs.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what stat of the day.
Celtics Heat game four. I'm going to call this a pivotal game four.
No. It's only pivotal game three, Dan, or pivotal game five.
Paulie, it's a pivotal game four.
No one's ever done this before.
I know, they haven't. And this is dangerous territory. The pivotal game four. Because if my Heat win tonight, then they're winning this series. But if Boston wins the series, now we're going to have a couple of pivotal games after that. It'll be a pivotal game five, and then a pivotal game six, and maybe a pivotal game seven. But that game comes up tonight. Here is LeBron James after last night's loss, the Nuggets beating the Lakers 114-106.
Denver came in and played exceptionally well. There's been a penalty in the third quarter with like 9.5 minutes to go, and we had some turnovers that led to some easy buckets for them. We had 16 turnovers for 25 points, and we put them to the line 29 times. So it's not going to be winning ingredients for us if we continue to do that.
Here's Mike Malone, the Nuggets head coach. He would like to remind everybody he has two really good players.
Last year we knew what we were getting from Nikola. What kind of game will Jamal have? Well, that's no longer the case. We have two superstars. We have two superstars in Nikola and Jamal, and a lot of other really good, young, talented players behind them. So I think the difference from last year to this year, Rachel, is just that consistency and the confidence that we all have in Jamal.
But also, they don't seem intimidated. And I will say from the beginning, the Lakers look tired because you don't have that much time in between games. And the Lakers did not look like they had been fresher before in other games. They did not look that way. Now, they had a frenetic finish there, you know, trying to come back, and Jamal Murray hit a couple of big threes there. But, you know, this Nuggets team may not know that they're not supposed to be in this or that they're supposed to lose, but they don't play that way, and you saw that last night. Coming up, we'll talk to Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated. A couple things to talk to him about, including, are we going to blow up the Clippers? Is Kawhi Leonard the only untouchable there? And if you start to look at this roster, are they going to be able to compete next year? Let's say we look at the Lakers will be just as good, if not better. The Rockets could be just as good, if not better. Denver, just as good as, if not better. Now, I'm talking about their current teams. This team would be better. Denver would be better next year. Golden State's going to be better. Portland is going to be better because they're going to be healthy. So if you're the Clippers here, you might be stuck in neutral. And we'll talk to Mannix about that of, do you make everybody available except for Kawhi Leonard? And how would Kawhi feel about that? Because it feels like he and Paul George joined at the hip, and they're both able to be free agents after next season. This program brought to you by the great folks at Home Depot. They are giving a call out to all you pros that work hard every day. It's called a shout out. They have delivery options to get what you need exactly when you need it, so you can keep doing what you do to get the job done. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Yes, Paulie?
Going back to the Nuggets and their coach just talking there, is it Nikola or Nikola? Well, I thought it was Nikola. And I thought it was Jokic would mean, and that would mean he's the Joker, not the Joker. How do you pronounce his name? I thought it was Nikola.
Nikola Jokic. Play it again. Here's Mike Malone, the Denver Nuggets head coach.
Last year it was, we knew what we were getting from Nikola. What kind of game will Jamal have? Well, that's no longer the case. We have two superstars. We have two superstars in Nikola and Jamal, and a lot of other really good, young, talented players behind them. So I think the difference from last year to this year, Rachel, is just that consistency and the confidence that we all have in Jamal.
And stop calling me Rachel. Yes, Tom.
Now, is that a new flavor of soft drink that he just created, the Nikola? I thought it was like that cough, like the throat drops.
Nikola! That's what I thought it was. You know, those throat lozenges? Yes, McLevin.
I actually saw this on Twitter. A lot of people call him Yoke. Or that was, somebody was trying to start Yoke. I guess like Dunk, Yoke. So like, maybe it is Jokic.
Like Yoke Boy? Like, yeah. Todd's Joke Boy?
So like, you know how Thibodeau and Tibbs change?
Yeah.
So you change for the nickname.
Mm. Lakers might have other words for Nikola Jokic. He's been great.
Who rarely dunks.
Nikola. Yeah, I don't know how many dunks. Maybe Ethan, who does our stats. You guys remember Ethan, don't you? Yeah, maybe you can tell us that. I'm wondering, who had more dunks, Luka Doncic or Nikola Jokic? Yeah, McLevin.
Ethan pulled it for me during the season. Luka had like three dunks on the season. Yeah. He does not. Is that a European thing where they play under the rim?
I have no idea. More players should play like the Joker and Doncic if that's the case, because they seem to be pretty good players. You know, two of the best five players in the game.
They got fundamentals over. They teach them at a
young
age.
Oh, is that what it is?
Euro-stepping.
Yeah? All right. Phone calls are welcome. We'll settle on a poll question. What do you have for me, McLevin? By the way, Notre Dame has postponed their game. Yeah, they were going to play Wake Forest. Has Wake Forest played like seven games or something? Feels like Wake Forest has played a couple of games each week here, but they're going to postpone it all the way to next week, and somehow they're going to make that work. Yes, Seton.
Somehow Eastern Kentucky plays five times a week, too. I've watched a lot of Eastern Kentucky football.
I'm watching Troy last night against Middle Tennessee. Now, I didn't know that it was already played over the weekend. So I'm watching that thing going, this is awesome. Tuesday night. And then all of a sudden I go, yeah, but it's bright sunshine.
Are they playing Hawaii? Or something?
What time zone? And I go, wait a minute here. It should be a little darker there. And then I go, let me Google this. And then I realize that Troy played over the weekend. Yes, McLeod.
All right, Troy plays Eastern Kentucky Saturday, October 17th. And they play BYU. BYU, Wake Forest, and Troy are on a three-man. They're just playing every game.
Yeah.
Poll question. It's kind of, I think it's mean-spirited. What's more likely, the Lakers win in five or the Nuggets come back and win series? Because I heard a lot of, oh, this is a blip. Lakers are going to get a win.
Well, I can't say it's a blip because Denver should have won the previous game. They should be up 2-1. Now, we don't know. You know, when that happens, they could be up 2-1. That, if they won the last game, would the Lakers have been different last night? The only thing that concerns me is that's an older team with the Lakers. And they did look a little tired. I can't say that they were taking the Nuggets lightly or they were less than enthusiastic last night. They just looked tired because I think it takes, I mean, it's going to take a toll on guys like Rondo, Dwight Howard, LeBron James, you know, all the minutes that LeBron has logged there. But, you know, I'm giving credit to Denver. That's a big game for them to win, and their stars came up big. Yes, McLovin.
The problem is, too, when these teams go to their benches, the Nuggets seem to have a big edge, or at least an edge.
Yeah.
So you can't rest LeBron because it's a disaster.
All right, what else do you have?
Okay, you brought it up earlier in the segment. Do you think the Nuggets would be here if it wasn't for the bubble? Yes or no? If we put that poll up, what do you think people would say?
I would say no. I think the neutral site has certainly helped them. But they do have a home court advantage when you play in Denver with the altitude there. But I don't think they would have come back to beat the Clippers. But, you know, they're here. They're not going away. And that's why, you know, when we talk about is there going to be an asterisk next to whoever wins, and really the asterisk has to do with LeBron James, the degree of difficulty to be away from home, quarantine in a bubble for 3 months, and then to play, not have home court advantage, and you're playing every other night, like whoever wins is going to earn this title. If Boston or Miami or Denver comes back or the Lakers, they will earn this title. The only reason why somebody will say, well, wait a minute, is if LeBron James wins the title. That's it. If Denver wins, nobody's going to go, yeah, but Jimmy Butler wins, you know, the Celtics win. Nobody's going to say that because no one will care, but they will care if LeBron somehow gets a quote-unquote cheap title. There's nothing cheap about this. Yes, McLovin.
But if the Nuggets win, it will be forever known as, oh, they won the bubble title. You don't think that they're going to discount? That'll be like the Rockets without Jordan on steroids. I don't think anyone will take that title seriously.
Yeah, Paul.
But why? Everyone's on the same playing field. It's different. It's if there's other NBA seasons have started later because of a strike. The baseball season started because of a strike. Like the 83 Redskins won the Super Bowl, right? Wasn't there a strike year, 82-83? Anyone bothered by it?
Yeah, McLovin.
I think it's because everyone knows the Lakers are the best team, and that people will say they were in the regular season, they were so dominant.
But they have 7 games to prove themselves. They have 7 games on a neutral right. site. LeBron James, the oldest player on both teams, is completely rested after 4 months of shutting it down. You'd think they don't have home court, but they have everything else.
It's just a level playing field because there's no ambiance in there. There's no crowd. There's no true home court advantage. And I think that it does help a younger team like Denver. That just goes like they have players who've never been in the position before. And I don't think they're overwhelmed by a moment here. You're looking at the Miami Heat. Look how young that team is. Aside from, you know, Butler and, you know, Jay Crowder. I mean, they got some really young players there. Boston's players, their best players are under 24. And it doesn't feel like the environment is too big for them. And normally when you get to a conference finals, and the game slows down, it's half court, there's more defense, it's more physical, it changes. And these players aren't ready for that. And it just feels like they have adapted. All of these players are, you know, have. Aside from the Lakers, all of these other teams, the younger players that are out there, and I think you see that on a night-in, night-out basis. I think players shoot more confidently. You know, the shooting numbers were pretty impressive in the bubble. I just don't think, you know, they got caught up in, we got to go to Staples, we got to go to the Garden. This was, I think, almost a comfort zone for a lot of these younger players. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the reasons you're saying is why they put a different asterisk. You're right, it won't be the LeBron asterisk, but another poll, we were talking about the NBA coaching Billy Donovan to the Bulls. Which coach / manager has the biggest impact on a team, can make a team a winner? NBA, MLB, or NFL? Like, what's most important to get the guy in there?
Well, baseball, it feels like before Tony La Russa, it felt like you just filled out a lineup card. And then Tony La Russa, you know, going to slow down the game and make it, you know, 3.5-4 hours long because he's going to, you know, dive into the stats and match up lefty versus lefty. Probably an NBA coach because it's 5 guys that, and you're controlling the ball each time down the floor. You know, you can set up a play defensively. You can be in contact with your players in real time during the game. You know, it's not like Belichick can slow down Cam Newton as he's running by and yell at him. But I would probably say a basketball coach does. You know, football, it's almost the days leading up to the game that means so much in preparation. although Belichick has proven there's no better coach who adapts, you know, moment to moment, quarter to quarter than he does. Probably in the history of sports, he's that good. So I would still say basketball coaches. But did Billy Donovan turn down the other? That's what I want to ask Chris Mannix. Because what's that say about your team if you're the 76ers and Billy Donovan says, nah. Indiana Pacers, nah. Chicago Bulls? I'd love to know what his reasoning is to go to the Chicago Bulls. They got a couple of nice players, and we're probably a borderline playoff team. But Indiana would have been more intriguing. And Philly, I guess, if you look at, they have two stars, I should say. But I don't like that roster. I don't like the way that's made up. And maybe Donovan wasn't offered the Pelicans. I still get the feeling that Mike D'Antoni is going to go to the Pelicans. But we'll talk to Mannix about that. What else do you have?
Okay. I don't want to jump ahead, but I'm so excited about Monday NFL lineup. Bigger rating. Ooh. And I'll drop this afterwards.
Okay.
Cowboys, Seahawks. Packers say on Sunday at 4:25, Packers Saints on Sunday night, or Chiefs Ravens on Monday night. I noticed the hype machine has started on Chiefs Ravens everywhere on ESPN.
Well, that's what ESPN does.
How'd they get this Monday night matchup?
Well, I think they gave him one cookie. Like, all right, you've been decent partners here, and you changed your Monday night team, so here's a cookie. We're going to give you this one. But it is cable. I think that it might be Cowboys Seahawks that might do a bigger number. Although you got Aaron Rodgers versus Drew Brees, everybody's going to tune in to see the tired arm of Drew Brees. Yes, yes, for two.
And why week three? Is that because the injuries could happen later in the year? Because obviously later in the year it might be more interesting is where things are in the standings than to have a Chief-Raven game the third week of the season.
Yeah, but I'm okay with it. I don't know how you position that, you know, when they do the schedule, but I'll take the Chiefs and the Ravens, you know, because we wondered, would that be the opening weekend game? Or the opening night game, would they do it right away? And they didn't, which is good. But yeah, I'm fine. Whenever I get that game, I'm fine with that. But you got three really important games. Yeah, McClellan.
I'm really fascinated to see if Drew Brees is good on Sunday.
What if he is good? Then what happens to his – did his arm get less tired? Like, how does it work there? That he's got a tired arm, but if he throws for three touchdowns and – you know, what it'll be is how far were those touchdown passes? That's what it's going to be. Oh, he threw like a 5-yarder and a 7-yarder and he threw an 8-yarder. It's like everybody's all in on Cam Newton. You got to give him a contract extension. He's played two games. How about we revisit this conversation in November with Cam Newton and just see where we are? Because we might have a different opinion on where the Patriots and Cam Newton are. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. All right, let's bring in Chris Mannix, kind enough to join us. Got a busy schedule, busy morning. The Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. What did you make of last night's win, or should I say loss, by the Lakers?
Well, I mean, you start with Denver once again showing that they have a poise that belies their years. I mean, this is a different setting, a different opponent, but the same Nuggets team that responds to resiliency. And, you know, watching that fourth quarter, Dan, when you see LeBron start to come on and start to play the way he did, it's like when you watch what Tiger Woods used to do or Tom Brady used to do, where you assume that somebody else is going to lose. But for Jamal Murray to react the way he did and respond, it's just another, you know, kind of layer or testament to Jamal Murray. I think for the Lakers, I mean, there are a bunch of different takeaways. One is that every game the Lakers have lost, they've shot like 28% or worse from three-point range. It was like 16-17% in Portland game one, 27-28% in game one against the Rockets, and last night it was like 23%. So there's a clear formula to beating the Lakers. Slow them down from three-point range, and you've got a good shot to beat them.
And I was talking about this in the first segment of this hour, and that is, you know, you're in the bubble, so we've sort of taken away that ambiance that can intimidate a young team. And you're finding that a lot of these teams, you know, the Celtics are young, the Heat has a lot of young players. Denver's a young team. They're not intimidated. You know, Denver to me doesn't come back from 3-1 against the Clippers if they're actually playing in Los Angeles at Staples. But in the bubble, it's kind of neutralized that, and you sort of see this. They didn't look like they were panicked last night. I don't know if they can come back and win this, but I don't discount them, and it feels like it's easy to sort of slap them away and say, nah, you got no shot here. You know, that I thought LeBron and the Lakers looked tired last night, and I think because of these games that, you know, there's no distance between, you know, games three and games four. And the bubble fatigue as well. I mean, I think there's a real, and you knew this, you were in the bubble, you know, it can kind of eat away at you here. But as you see the Lakers, as we move forward, any issues with this, you know, that this is just a hiccup last night, or is there still a pattern there you're concerned about?
It's not so much a pattern that I'm concerned with the Lakers. It's just the Nuggets are really good and they're capable of winning this series. I mean, Denver's probably, you know, sitting back going to practice today thinking we should be up 2-1. You know, if we don't have a blown defensive coverage at the end of that game too, where, you know, Mason Plumlee does something on that screen that he shouldn't have done, they could be up 2-1 this series and firmly in control. I think if you're the Lakers, in addition to finding ways to get your three-point shooters more open and more accurate, you've got to win the rebounding battle, right? Like, you can't play Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis as many minutes as they do and get beat 44-25 on the glass. I think those three players, I believe, combined for four rebounds. Yeah. Like, you just can't do that. If you're gonna play big, you better control the glass in the way they've done in previous series, or else you might as well play AD at five for the duration of these games.
I call this a pivotal game four tonight with the Heat and Celtics. Nobody calls it a pivotal game four, Mannix, but I do. But I think that if the Heat win tonight, that they're winning this series. And if Boston wins tonight, I think Boston might be winning this series. Your thoughts?
So strong take there, Dan.
Thank
pivotal
you.
Game four.
Yes.
I like that.
Thank you.
If Boston loses, I don't discount them from coming back. I think a lot of people got wrapped up after game two in some of the emotion the Celtics showed. And there was a lot of comparisons I read about last year's team. Last year's team genuinely didn't like each other, like did not want to be around each other. This year's team is totally different. That, you know, losing game two the way they did, that frustration combined with being in the bubble for 2+ months, it just all kind of boiled over. This year's team likes each other, plays well with each other, and is capable of winning any single game in the series. I think this game four, though, comes down to Jimmy Butler in a lot of ways. I mean, Jimmy Butler is like kind of a slow starting car. Like he kind of gets it going early in the first three quarters. And in the fourth, he's going all the way, trying to get his shots and trying to take over in games. He's averaged, Dan, in the regular season around 12, 13 shots per game. He's averaged in the postseason around 12, 13 shots per game. I think for Miami to win, he's got to average more than that. He's got to be in the high teens, maybe even the low 20s to prevent Miami from getting into another one of these big holes that they can't shoot themselves out of. So I look to see how aggressive Jimmy Butler is in game four, and that will dictate how this game goes.
Butler is sort of the opposite of Paul George, that he gets started in the last 6 minutes of the game, whereas playoff Paul sort of disappears then. That brings me to the Clippers. I start to look at the makeup of this team, and maybe we're on the same page. Denver will be a better team next year. Portland will be a better team. Golden State will be a better team. Lakers will probably be status quo, if not a little better. And then the Rockets might be better or status quo, which leads me to the Clippers. What do the Clippers do? Because is this roster good enough that they have this year to win a championship next year?
I do think it is. And I think it would be panicking to make any kind of substantial changes. I think the Clippers, their biggest offseason issue is going to be being able to afford key role players like Montrezl Harrell, who's going to get a big offer this summer or this offseason, and Marcus Morris, who's going to get at least a solid one-year offer from somebody this offseason. Steve Ballmer is going to have to reach deep into his pockets to, you know, come up with the kind of money needed to pay the luxury tax that this team is going to have to pay. But I don't think you change a single thing. I was as disappointed as anyone by the Clippers You can't lose a series when you're up 3-1. Simple as that, especially not when you have a player like Kawhi Leonard. But given the strangeness of this season and the problems the Clippers had when they got to the bubble with so many guys being missing early on, with Montrezl Harrell not even playing until game one of this series, I don't think your reaction to this loss is let's change everything. Now, next season,
yeah,
no doubt, Dan, the biggest season in the history of the Clippers franchise. If they don't at least get to the finals, you could see that team broken up. I mean, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard can become free agents. Doc Rivers, an enormous season for him. I had a GM text me that said Doc Rivers has taken this team exactly as far as Vinny Del Negro has. Like, he has got to take that team deep and prove that he's that championship caliber coach they thought they were getting. Next season is everything. That's all the marbles. But I don't think this season you make a change. It's just too many outside-the-box, unthinkable variables happened that interrupted this season.
Billy Donovan to the Bulls. How surprising?
Not surprising. You know, I had talked to Billy briefly after Oklahoma City lost in that Game 7, and I never got the sense that he wanted to get out of coaching for a year, take a break, or even go back to college. I think Billy Donovan wanted to be associated with a team with a plan. And at that point, Oklahoma City, which wanted him back, they didn't really have a plan. They still don't really have a plan for how that team's going to move forward. Are they going to keep Chris Paul and build around him? Are they going to trade Chris Paul, blow the whole thing up, and start from scratch? Remember, Billy Donovan took over that team in 2015, and they were a championship contender. They had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. 5 years later, I don't know what they are. The Bulls are not a good team right now, but they're a team with the plan. They've got Arturis Karnasovich, a very respected top basketball executive, leading things now. They've got good young talent, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, guys like that. And just as important, in the summer of 2021, when Otto Porter comes off the books, some other contracts come off the books, they can be players in free agency. And a good Chicago team is going to be an appealing place to go for some free agents. So the Bulls aren't perfect, but at least they're a team with a plan, and that's what appealed to Billy Donovan.
But where do we stand with Philadelphia? Where do we stand with New Orleans? Where do we stand with Indiana? Are they waiting for the playoffs to be over at looking at other candidates?
Possibly. It's a little surprising that Philadelphia hasn't moved on Tyronn Lue right now. I think Ty Lue just makes too much sense for that situation. He's a guy that has a proven track record, not just in winning championships or a championship, but in dealing with big ego players, right? Like, he coached the Lakers or coached the Cavaliers with LeBron. He's been on Doc Rivers' staff in many different stops, coaching big name stars. He can handle the challenge that is Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. It makes me wonder what Philadelphia is doing if they haven't acted on that. I think with Indiana and New Orleans, it's a lot of Mike D'Antoni mixed in there. I think Mike D'Antoni is a strong candidate for both jobs, and it may come down to which team makes him the best financial offer.
Before I let you go, next season, when do you think next season gets started?
You know, I've said for weeks now, Dan, I think Martin Luther King Day, January 18th, is a reasonable starting point. I think the NBA would love to start on Christmas, but as you heard Adam Silver say, December just doesn't seem likely. And that has everything to do with the union not wanting to rush this season start after finishing in mid-October. Martin Luther King Day, you can start that day. It's a good starting point for the NBA. I don't think they go a full 82 games. I mean, everybody in the league office I've talked to has said, we don't want to compete with the Olympics. That means getting out in mid-July is paramount. So if I had to guess right now, and as we all know, it's incredibly fluid, I would say January 18th, and it's a 60-something game season that gets the league done by early to mid-July at the latest.
But are we looking at the potential for another bubble season?
Not a bubble season, but if the NBA doesn't believe they can get back in their buildings, they will do regional bubbles.
Yeah.
I mean, the league has regular conference calls with NBA general managers, and the ones I've talked to have said, look, this is right now for where we're at with everything going on. Regional bubbles is atop the list. Like, that's what we're planning towards in the beginning of the season. Now, 3 months from now, if we get into December and there's a vaccine and there's a window to getting fans back in the stands in February, everything changes. But right now, they're looking at regional bubbles, and we've talked about this before, where it's 1 month in, a week to 10 days out, rinse, wash, repeat, until you can get things back to normal.
Oh, what is normal? Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it. We know you got a busy day. Thank you.
I'm in my kitchen, Dan. There's nothing normal.
Yeah, but you don't do anything in your kitchen other than do interviews. You don't cook, right?
It's not true. I put salami on wheat bread at least once a day.
What is in your What's in your refrigerator right now?
Salami.
That's
lots
it.
Lots of it.
And beer.
Like over 3 pounds of salami, beer, and Sobe water. That's it, basically. Yeah.
You live the dream. You live the dream, man.
It is something.
You're inspiring something. All of those kids who want to grow up to be an NBA reporter. You're really inspiring them right now. This is how you live.
Be about that life.
Thank you, bud. That's Chris Mannix. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. I mentioned about 15 minutes ago, Gale Sayers, the great Chicago Bear running back, Hall of Famer, passed away at the age of 77. He was the first running back I saw who defied logic. You know, when you watch The Matrix and you see how Keanu Reeves moves, Gale Sayers was doing that on a football field. He gave you this illusion. It was like, here it is, and then he would move it away from you. He had this unbelievable ability to cut, and he made people miss. We look at Barry Sanders, and Barry Sanders, of course, was phenomenal, and he made you miss. Gale Sayers did it in a way that had a poetry to it. It felt like it was slow motion the way he was moving and making people miss, but it was real time, and it sort of defied logic. But he was the first running back I remember, and I grew up watching the Cleveland Browns every Sunday. That was the game we always got. So I got to see Jim Brown, Leroy Kelly later on. You got to see O.J. Simpson in the late 60s. I got to see him. O.J. was another player. O.J. defied logic as well with his ability to cut and make people miss and have this burst, this acceleration. And the Bears weren't a very good team, but they had two of the greatest players of all time, and Dick Butkus, Gale Sayers. They went in the same draft. But Gale Sayers, in fact, back-to-back third and fourth picks of round one for the Chicago Bears and George Halas. But Gale Sayers, his career cut short. I remember watching that game when I think it was Kermit Alexander, the 49ers, hit him in his knee. And if it happened now, Gale would have been able to resume his career. But he was just wonderful to watch. It was just, we got cheated there a little bit. But he was just, the ability to make people miss was, it was phenomenal. That game against the 49ers, and he played on a terrible turf at Wrigley Field. And it just felt like it was, a mess because it was a baseball field. But he had a game against the 49ers, and it was muddy. And he was the only one who wasn't affected by it. And that might have been when he had six touchdowns. He just did it in every punt return. He could throw passes. I mean, he was just an amazing, amazing player. I only met him once, and he had this quiet demeanor about him. There was nothing, he was one of those guys that his personality didn't match the way he played. Because his personality, he was kind of compartmentalized and measured. But pleasant. But he would get on a football field, and he was an assassin there. But Gale Sayers passing away at the age of 77. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app as we bring in Mike Florio, co-host of Pro Football Live. You can see it on Peacock, and he joins us on the program. Mike, let me start with these coaches who have been fined large dollar amounts here, and then their teams fined as well. I'm just trying to understand the difference between the NFL and the NBA, whereas NBA, players on the bench, they'll be wearing a mask, but the coach doesn't have to. But then we saw John Gruden and Sean Payton get fined this week. They are supposed to wear a mask, but the players on the bench, unless it's San Francisco and Buffalo, don't have to. So I'm trying to understand this. Why is it okay for some coaches in some sports and not in others?
Well, the NFL made the rule, Dan, that the coaches must have their faces covered, noses and mouths on the sideline. Now, that rule was conceived at a time when the NFL wanted to test everyone just three times per week. That has since become daily testing, and that's the philosophical question that keeps coming up. If everyone's being tested daily, why do the coaches have to wear a mask when none of the players are? It's a strange juxtaposition that we see during the games. The players are running around with no masks, and then the coach is supposed to have a mask on, and they haven't changed that rule. I don't think they are going to change that rule. They expect the coaches to comply, and the five most egregious offenders are the ones that got hit for $100,000 and their teams for $250,000. And they wanted to hit them hard enough so they don't just view it as a cost of doing business. So they don't just write the check for all 15 remaining games and say, now leave me alone and let me go not wear my mask in peace. They want to get their attention, and I think they're going to continue to be aggressive about it if the coaches don't comply.
Explain to me about the playing surface at MetLife Stadium with the Jets and Giants, and what is the biggest concern?
Well, what happened during the 49ers-Jets game on Sunday, a lot of lower leg injuries, some season-ending injuries, including one suffered by Nick Bosa, the 49ers defensive end, and I think that really changes that team dramatically to not have him. The complaints began to come from individual 49ers players saying that there's something wrong with the turf, that their foot gets stuck in the turf. And I started to poke around. The Giants and the Steelers had played there 6 days earlier. They had no issues with the turf. I asked someone from the Jets. The response was, we were too busy getting our faces kicked in to notice anything wrong with the turf. But the 49ers had the issue. They had the complaint. The league's position is these fields are certified. They're certified by an independent inspector. They're certified by the teams. Well, to me, that's not good enough, Dan, because we've seen plenty of crappy fields over the years that have been certified as being suitable for play. Remember the FedEx field surface, yeah. The day they had to paint the dirt green for a playoff game, the game where Robert Griffin III's ACL finally went. So I don't accept that as being dispositive, and the NFLPA has echoed the 49ers' concerns that maybe we should take a look at this. What's the harm in reconfirming that everything is fine with this playing surface? And it feels like something more than just sour grapes by the 49ers. There are enough guys complaining about it to at least raise the question of why not take a closer look and make sure there's nothing wrong with this new playing surface.
Yeah, but what can you do? Can the Niners refuse to play the Giants this weekend?
That's what makes it so fascinating. Usually what happens is the road team, if they have a problem with the field, they're not coming back for the rest of the year. They may not be coming back for 8 years if it's an interconference game. Here they are 7 days later back on the same field, and the Giants have come out strong. Joe Judge, the head coach, has said, we practiced there throughout training camp. We have no issues at all with this, and I don't think the NFL is going to give them any relief. I mean, we've seen in the past where a field has gotten so bad, a team's had to tear it up and replace it. At New England at one point, they had to get rid of the grass and put down field turf. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the 49ers are just going to have to deal with it. And I don't think the NFL is going to concede that there was an issue with the turf. They say it's fine, and they're going to go forward, and we'll see what the 49ers players have to say after playing there again this weekend.
The week two overreactions are always interesting because Cam Newton, now we want to sign him up to a long-term contract in New England, and Drew Brees is ready to join you on Football Night in America sooner than we thought.
During the season.
Yes, yes. Of those two storylines right now, if I said I'm going to talk to you in November about Drew Brees and his performance and Cam Newton and his performance, how different would it be, will it be, in November when we're talking about these two quarterbacks?
Oh, I don't think it'll – well, it should be different because I think both guys played consistently with who they are. The question with Cam Newton is he healthy? And that's why he was looking for so long for a job. Teams weren't sure whether or not he was healthy, and teams weren't in a position to find out. The Patriots eventually took the leap of faith and decided to roll the dice, and they were willing to – upend their quarterback depth chart for Cam Newton. See, that's the problem. Even though he's better than a lot of quarterbacks, what teams out there were willing to upend their depth chart if Cam Newton shows up and is instantly better than the person in whom they invested a top 10 pick or invested $30 million per year, whatever the case may be? All of a sudden, you got a split in the locker room where you got guys saying, why in the hell is Cam Newton not the starter? So that's the situation you're in if he ends up being healthy. You're not even sure he's going to be healthy. So let's see how this plays out. He's run the ball a lot. He's been in harm's way. We've seen that from him in the past. And what's happened in the past? He's been injured. And for Drew Brees, what we've seen throughout his career is what he's doing. He's running the offense, and he runs the offense very well. They didn't have Michael Thomas this week, and it showed. And until Michael Thomas comes back, I think we withhold judgment on whether or not Drew Brees is done.
I'm still trying to figure out Anthony Lynn, who I do love. You know, I watching Hard Knocks, I loved his personality. And maybe I shouldn't be surprised with his reaction to Justin Herbert, where, he was asked about, well, who's your starter? And he goes, Tyrod Taylor is. Justin Herbert is a backup here. That's a pretty good audition by Justin Herbert. So why are the Chargers apprehensive to turn it over to him?
Yeah, that really raises the bar for the starter if that's what your backup does. And I watched that game. Justin Herbert was incredible. He's almost like – he looked like Philip Rivers, but like in one of those video games where if you complete 10 passes in a row, like your player gets supersized. I mean, he's a giant. He put Damian Wilson on his ass on the sideline. He runs it well. He had a fake – pitch at one point. He froze Frank Clark and ran right by him. The guy can do it all. He hustles. There was a play where Austin Eckler was running the ball 10 yards downfield. Herbert took off sprinting just to kind of hang around, like crashing the boards. Like you never know what's going. When does a quarterback ever do that? This kid gets it. And I think that what the Chargers are doing, they're playing the 100% card. Tyrod Taylor plays when he's 100%. He just won't be 100%. And by the time he is 100%, Justin Herbert will be entrenched as the starter. And he's got an easy game coming up this week against Carolina. And then it's on the road against hashtag Tommy and Drew Brees back-to-back weeks. What a contrast that is. This great young quarterback against the two oldest guys in the league at quarterback. But I think he's going to get some more chances to show what he can do. And I was amazed with how good he was. To get the tap on the shoulder a minute before the game and to play like he did was incredible.
When does Tua make his debut?
He should be. Why isn't he playing now? Right, the hip's fine. He was completely off the injury report last week. He's not getting any treatment on the hip. We already see Joe Burrow, and he's passed the eyeball test. He's been great for the Bengals. We see Herbert. I mean, history would suggest that Tua is going to be the bust out of the three. When have there been three top six quarterbacks and they all end up being great? If I'm the Dolphins, I want to find out what this guy has. Every game that you let the guy play now makes him better in the future. Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't going to be the quarterback next year. Tua's going to be the quarterback. I'd want to get him on the field. And at some point, the owner's got to make that call and say, we invested in this guy for the future. Let's get him ready for the future by putting him on the field in the present.
Talking to Mike Florio, co-host Pro Football Talk Live. You can watch that on Peacock. I'm with you on the Broncos situation that you bring in Blake Bortles. And if there ever was a situation where if Colin Kaepernick was going to get at least a look, it would have been then, in my opinion, and he doesn't even get a look because I don't think there's any harm in just saying, let's bring them both in and let them compete for this backup job unless John Elway says, you know what, if we bring him in, are we willing to let him win the job? Because, Drew Lock is their future. So I don't know if they looked at this the way the Patriots would have with Cam to a lesser degree. If he comes in and he's not your starter and then he's your backup quarterback, is that good for business here with the development of Jared Stidham? But with Kaepernick, there's far more to it. Why didn't the Broncos bring him in?
Well, why doesn't anybody bring him in? Why hasn't his phone rung in 4 years now? And, there's so many narratives out there. He only wants to be a starter. He wants $20 million a year. He doesn't want to be a backup. He doesn't want to be on a practice squad. I mean, the Eagles are giving Josh McCown $12,000 a week for a no-show job. Just stay in Texas, keep working out, and if we need you, we'll call you. Here's 12 grand a week for your trouble. And if any of those narratives are true, why won't one of these teams call his bluff? Just call him up and say, hey, how would you like a no-show job with us for 12 grand a week? Stay in shape. And if we get in a COVID-19 pinch, we'll have you on our roster. Why not do that? I mean, no one will call him on these things that people think are the impediments to him taking a job in the NFL. And with the Broncos, there's a history there, Dan. They tried to trade for him in 2016.
Yeah.
He refused to reduce his $12 million guaranteed salary. And then in 2017, once the kneeling started, John Elway was, well, he had his chance last year, so we're not interested this year. So I'm not surprised the Broncos have shunned this guy. They're one of the original Kaepernick shunners. But this bigger picture, you know, there was that period of time in June where people were like, damn, this guy was right all along with the reasons why he was protesting and the things he was trying to tell us. And it felt like there was some momentum, and then it all just disappeared. And I think this isn't the final nail in the coffin. This is the extra nail. This is the reminder that no one is going to call this guy. And with each passing day, with each passing game, it's easier to justify it because you say, well, he hasn't played in 3.5 years. Yeah, he hasn't played in 3.5 years because you blackballed him.
Should I buy into the Raiders?
Let's see what happens this weekend in New England. I think it's too early to tell. You never know early in the year how good the teams are that you've beaten. They took it too deep into the game with the Panthers week one. And if the Saints really are on the verge of maybe seeing their run end, we don't know how good the Raiders are. Let's see what they can do against Cam Newton.
You're a buzzkill.
Well, I'm a realist.
No, that doesn't help. We're supposed to have hot takes. I'm reminded that every day, like, you got to have more hot takes. I'm like, I don't have hot takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot takes eventually put you in a spot where, you know, those dreams when you're like walking through the grocery store naked, you know, you feel that way with your takes. So I've learned the hard way too. I've walked through many a grocery store naked, figuratively, over the years.
What was your Super Bowl picks?
What was it? I've already forgotten.
Oh,
I love a good – people say, what do you root for? I root for a good story. And what better story than the Patriots and the Buccaneers? So I don't know how I feel about the Buccaneers after two games, but I think the Patriots are better than we expected them to be. And if they keep Cam Newton healthy, they're going to be a factor. Think about some of these playoff games we could have. If the Patriots and the Chiefs cross paths in the postseason, Patriots and the Ravens – I mean, if Cam Newton can stay healthy, this Patriots team is not a team to overlook.
But who do you like in the division?
And I still like the Patriots.
Oh, okay.
I think the Bills got to deal with the Patriots twice, Week 8 and Week 16, and those will be some great games. But they shouldn't have been in a position to win that game on Sunday night. That's the combination of Bill Belichick and Cam Newton. And frankly, they outsmarted themselves down at the goal line. They don't call the timeout when they should have. I don't know if you saw the clip of Bill Belichick's press conference after the game. It was beautiful, and it's a new way to avoid a question. If someone asks you a question you don't want to answer, you just sit there and say nothing. And after about 30 seconds, they'll move on to the next question. It's perfect. I'm going to have to try it out somewhere. But, they should have called timeout. They maybe should have passed the ball at the goal line. Give Cam Newton multiple options. Don't just give him one option in that position. But they could have won that game in Seattle. So I think they're going to be really good this year, and I think they're going to win the division.
But also, when do you discuss a contract with him? Because people want to do it now. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it now if I'm the Patriots.
He said yesterday, I'm fine. It's not my focus. You know, Dan, for him to make the full $7.5 million this year, he essentially has to be the regular season MVP and the Super Bowl MVP. Those aren't the firm requirements, but as a practical matter, that's what he's got to do. And if that happens, that $7.5 million will be the best investment in the history of American, maybe worldwide sport, to get that Super Bowl for the $7.5 million they'd have to pay Cam Newton. And then you worry about it next year. And the beauty of the contract is they can use the franchise tag on him next year. There wasn't a commitment to give that up as part of the deal. And that's the wisdom of just letting it simmer, letting it sit, wait until he's at the low point of his expectations and he'll take anything he gets. That's when the Patriots swooped in and got the deal done.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing anything. And I would probably look at franchising him. But, if he's not concerned about it, I'm sure Bill Belichick is not concerned about it either. Mike, great to talk to you as always. We appreciate your time. Thank you, bud.
All right, Dan. Have a good day, buddy.
That's Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. NFL quarterback, NFL Network analyst, and you can watch David. Thursday night football continues. Tomorrow night, Dolphins, Jags exclusively on NFL Network. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing okay. When you watch your brother play on Monday night, can you watch and relax and enjoy a game where your brother's playing?
No, absolutely not. I was sweating 2 hours after that football game because I have literally no control over what happens. I mean, the last time he took advice from me was like when he was 14. So like I have no say in anything that happens on the field.
But what would you tell him? Like, even though he may not listen.
At this point, nothing.
Nothing?
At this point, nothing. I mean, honestly, like, when you watch them play, he has such a command at the line of scrimmage. Like, him and John did such a good job the other night. The Saints did a good job early of giving him some different looks and kind of changing it up because they know that he's going to audible pretty much every play. So, but once they got in the groove, it was just amazing to watch because, like, on third down, like, you can say what you want about their offense, about how, you know, it's maybe short or intermediate. They get the ball out of their hand fast, a lot of completions. You know, the yards per attempt has always been a common theme. But since 2016, Tom Brady did this. No one has had a higher quarterback rating on third down. And then again, this year, in the first two games, Derek's quarterback rating on third down is 141.4. So that's like the level playing field. We need 7 yards. They're the best in the league at getting that first down. So I just watch and kind of say, man, I wish I had that kind of command. I wish I had a coach that believed in me like that. I mean, the offensive line played stellar. They lost Richie Incognito. They had Trent Brown on the sideline. I mean, I know they talked about Michael Thomas not being there, but, man, they were depleted, and they still ran the ball when they wanted to, played physical on defense. It's just fun to watch, man. I watch as a fan now.
But why is it feels like the Raiders haven't been all in with your brother in recent years?
You know it's media. It's out there. And that's what's so frustrating with him. Like, he gets in training camp, and he just goes on this rant when he goes and gets a chance to talk to the media, and he says, I'm tired of being disrespected, because he feels one thing from the inside. So when Mike Mayock when he's talking to Mike and when he's talking to John, it's like, all in, we're going to fix this thing. We're going to do it right. You're our quarterback. Everything from the inside is they're completely sold on him. And then on the outside, he hears, oh, well, maybe they'll go pick up a quarterback. Maybe they'll do this in the first round. They've had like 7 different chances to draft a quarterback in the first round. They haven't done it. So, and you know, John, he loves quarterbacks. So he's going to go grab one if he feels like he needs one. So, I mean, for Derek, that's the frustrating part, is what's happening on the inside and what's happening on the outside are two completely different things.
As an analyst, what would concern you if you're a Raider fan with this team?
Well, defensively is the thing that I've kind of had a concern for a while. You watched that first half of that last game. It looked like it was about to be a wrap. Michael Thomas is tweeting, this is going to be a blowout. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, he's probably right. You know, so they finally turned it around, played some physical football. Jonathan Abram is interesting because he's kind of a tone setter there. So you watch Taysom Hill. They put him at quarterback. He runs his zone read, and he gets his head knocked off by Jonathan. They don't run that anymore. And it almost was like a little bit of an igniter for that defense to kind of say, okay, we're just going to play physical. We're going to fly around. We might make some mistakes. We'll give up some plays. But if we can lock it up in the red zone, get an interception right before half, you know, you just got to be opportunistic. You don't have to be a top 10 defense. If you got an offense like they're going to have, you don't have to be great. You just got to get the ball back, steal it from Drew right before the half, go get some points, and then just try and survive. Because at the end of the game, I was sitting there thinking, if we're not up 10, you know, inside 2 minutes, we don't have a chance. And fortunately enough, they were up 2 scores.
What do you make of the Drew Brees tired arm controversy?
Well, it's a real thing because, I mean, it's father time. You can't defeat that. As strong and as well as Drew works in the offseason, you know, you can't combat that. The problem is, and here's what I see, is his brain is writing checks that his body can't cash. So, like, the interception that he threw right before the half, 10 years ago, he drops that ball right over the top of Moreau, and it's probably a first down. It's probably exactly where he wants to go. But, and I've been there, especially when I go out and throw now. You go to throw the ball, your brain says, this is what I need to do. This is the kind of, you know, energy I need to provide here. And then it comes up 10 yards short and you're like, what happened? And it's just part of the game. And he did that, you know, he did that consistently the first week, did that again against the Raiders. He did it a little bit last year too. We just kind of didn't really notice a little bit. You know, we talked about it a little bit, but it's just one of those things that he's going to have to just work through because it's not going to get better, you know, but he's still sharp. He still knows where to go with the ball. He knows what play to get into. I mean, that stuff's not going to go away. If anything, it's going to get better, you know, with the more reps, but the, you know, it's kind of like that, you know, mentally and physically, he's already missed that peak. He's on the way down. So it's going to be a tough thing to watch.
I love this on Monday night, Dan Orlovsky of the Mothership, former backup quarterback in the NFL. He tweets out, if Derek Carr won't be aggressive on third and one play action pass with Ruggs on the field in man coverage, he's never going to be. And then David Carr tweets, relax, Dan.
I just had to. And then my wife asked me, are you fighting with Dan Orlovsky? I'm like, no, I'm not fighting with Dan Orlovsky. He just said some dumb thing that I had to comment on because they ended up going off and scoring and doing whatever they wanted to. So, look, so like that play in particular, like I don't have a chair. I don't have a headset on during the game. I can't tell people this, but it is. It's a third and one. You know, you got Ruggs. He's actually being doubled. If you watch the end zone, he's being doubled by the safety in the corner. And Witten is being guarded by a linebacker. Now, Witten, because it's man coverage off the play action, the linebacker steps up for the run, misses the fact that Witten releases. So the safety, being a smart player, says, well, someone's wide open. So he leaves the middle of the field. Looks like Henry Ruggs is wide open for a touchdown. Derek's already let the ball go for the first down. So it's just one of those things that happens bang, bang, but the camera catches it at a certain time. They're trying to get Ruggs involved. I mean, he took two shots to him later, took a shot to him, ended up winning the game to Janoris down the sideline. If Jenkins doesn't grab him, he might have a big play there. So, you know, they're going to work him in there, but he's a young guy. It takes a while for young receivers to kind of figure it out, but he's got plenty of ability. They'll get him going.
He's David Carr, the NFL Network analyst, former NFL quarterback. Thursday Night Football on the NFL Network. It's Dolphins, Jaguars. Am I the only person who ever pointed out that your brother looks like the lead singer, Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day?
You have pointed that out numerous times.
I know, and but am I the actually, only guy who ever did that? Does Billy Joe Armstrong think that your brother looks like him?
It's the eyeliner, dude. You know, it's the natural eyeliner.
Are they both wearing eyeliner?
No. Well, definitely Billy is. And I mean, I'd love to say, like, as an older brother, I would absolutely love to say, yes, Derek's wearing eyeliner. But I can't do that. I mean, I can't do that. That's not what he's doing, man. Oh, he's a football player.
That's one of those where he came on and I said, does anybody ever tell you look like the guy from Green Day? He goes, no. And then all of a sudden, what do you do with the Chargers? If you have, you saw this little, I mean, unbelievable performance by Justin Herbert, but then Anthony Lynn says, no, he's a backup and Tyrod Taylor is our quarterback. Tyrod Taylor's got a lot to live up to this next game compared to Justin Herbert did.
So no doubt about it. You don't ask me because I'm playing the rookie. I'm playing that young kid because that was outstanding. The throw he made to Keenan Allen on 3rd and 14 down the middle of the field as he's getting hit from the right side, right tackle misses block or kind of just doesn't get enough of him. That was the best throw we saw all Sunday. I mean, but hands down, you know, and so that's what he's done a lot at Oregon, throwing those vertical seam type routes. He made some bad plays. Like on that actual drive, he takes a sack, ends up being 2nd and 24, shouldn't have taken the sack, dump it out. Okay, so he messed up. The next two plays, he rips it to the tight end, picks up 10 yards, rips it to Keenan, picks up another 14. They end up getting a field goal, sends him into overtime later because of those 3 points that he got. So, I mean, he went toe-to-toe with the world champs, and he played pretty well. So I think that, honestly, I think what happened was, you know, because of whatever happened with Tyrod before the game, and maybe, you know, the reason he couldn't go is because of maybe some of the medical things that was going on. I mean, I think they could just feel bad, you know, because, okay, we might have messed up here. We can't just take Tyrod's job because maybe we did something wrong. So I think there's a little bit of that, you know, honestly, and that's kind of what they're working through, because I think that if anybody watches that game, you know, you got a good enough defense. Justin gives you a real chance to go out there and make some kind of splash plays. He'll make some mistakes, but he'll learn from it. He had a smile on his face. I loved watching him. I thought he did a great job.
Well, it's the same thing with Tua. At what point do you let Tua play? Because Ryan Fitzpatrick is not your quarterback next year. Does he play tomorrow night?
I hope so. I mean, I think that Chan Gailey was brought in for this very reason, to have Tua as a quarterback. I mean, this thing's been in the works now for multiple years. You know, you bring Chan Gailey in because he's kind of the RPO guy from like back in the day. He was doing it before anybody. You know, you make an offense that's quarterback friendly. Now, granted, Fitz can play. I mean, I love the beard. I mean, I came out, I watched this guy play. You know, we kind of grew up together, right? Nothing against Fitz, but I think Tua can get into this system and he's not going to hurt you. You know, he's going to, if anything, he might amplify what you got going on. So, and he's going to fit perfectly in this scheme that you have hand tailored for him. So the only thing that I can't answer, that we probably can't answer sitting here, is how ready is he mentally? Cause we didn't see any preseason games. We didn't get a chance to see, has he picked it up? Does he understand? How's his hip feeling? Like all those little things that we probably don't know. You know, that's probably the only reason that's holding him back.
If I said you have one game to win, it's a playoff game, and you pick anybody in the NFL right now, who would you pick?
At quarterback?
Yeah.
Besides my brother? Because he's great on third down. We just mentioned it.
Would you take your brother over Russell Wilson? Patrick Mahomes?
So, honestly, when I watched Russell Wilson play and I heard last week that he hadn't ever received an MVP vote, I stood up out of my chair and walked out of the living room. I was like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of crazy to me. And I don't know, he's in Seattle. So not a lot of people get to see him. They have a great win week one. No one really even talks about it. But he's as dynamic a quarterback as we've ever seen. He does everything you want. If you want to throw it quick, if you want to throw it with pressure, you want him to move, you want him to run zone runs, you want him to throw the ball down the field, he's better than everybody at pretty much everything. And I love his makeup. I love what he brings to the table. I think right now he's the best quarterback in the league. You know, it's easy to say after watching him the first couple weeks, but I've felt that for a long time. I have a top 15 that I do every week. Russell Wilson's never been out of the top five. He's always right there just because of what he brings to that football team. And now he's got some guys around him, DK. Yeah. You know, you got Jamal on defense, so you'll get the ball back a little bit more. I think they got a real chance to do something.
Longest career run, you or your brother? Who has the longer one?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know we roasted him for a while because he didn't have a rushing touchdown for like the first 5 years of his career. But longest rushing, I don't know. I might have had like a 20-yarder or something, maybe 25-yarder. He definitely
– You had a 36. You had a 36.
Okay, 36.
Yeah.
He might have had one. I think he had one early, maybe his rookie year that was maybe 40.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, 41. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating. I know because I remember he broke – kind of past the 30, and I was like, really? That's what you're just going to take that from me?
But do you make fun of him because he didn't have a rushing touchdown for 5 years?
Oh, my goodness. Oh my goodness. I'm like, dude, you have the power to call, to audible to a quarterback sneak at any time. You've been on the one like 20 times. Just call your
Brady,
own number.
Brady's always calling his number
every
on the one.
Every time. And then when I played against Peyton when I was back in Houston, every time. Peyton is either going to call a pass play on the 1 yard line or a quarterback sneak. He's not giving it to the running back or Edgerrin James. He should have 50 more touchdowns than he had.
But how angry do running backs get when quarterbacks get to the 1 yard line and they want to do a quarterback sneak?
They give you the pat on the head, but it's with a little bit more aggression, you know? And you're like, yeah, I know. I did that to you. That's my bad, dude.
Plus those 1 yard pass, you know, those touchdown passes too.
Hey, they still count. They still count as touchdowns. You go back and look at Peyton when he threw 55 touchdowns, whatever it was. There were 35 of them were inside the 3 yard line. So whatever.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, David, as always. We really appreciate your insights. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks,
that's David Carr. Well, that's a good appearance there. NFL Network analyst, former NFL quarterback. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.